This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
We got Matt. Matt's going to anger. He said he's in the newsroom. He's going to piss everybody off.
I'm technologically embarrassing myself in front of Trista Crick. This is a nightmare.
No, that's fine. What's up, Matt?
Hey, gang. How's it going?
Casey said Keegan sucks. That he can't. He looks like Buddy Hield on the defensive side of the ball. Well, then there again. Okay. And Matt said the hell with this.
I'm out of here.
No, Matt's the second. That's great. Matt's the second person we've had just leave the show.
Today, or in general?
Yeah, Kyle quit like in the middle of a
He's just gone.
Matt, you don't have to talk to Kenny. You could just talk to me.
Yeah, I'm not putting up with that. If he speaks, I'm out of here again.
Is Keegan an overrated defender?
No. Absolutely not. He's a extremely stretched thin defender, in my opinion, because he's responsible for defending basically every position unless Keon Ellis is on the floor with him, especially now that De'Aaron Fox is gone. I mean, in that starting five, he is responsible for not just the best defender one-on-one, but he has to always keep an eye on the secondary defender too. He has to try and help as much as he possibly can off the ball, not to mention crash the glass. He's responsible for keeping an eye on whoever Zach LaVine or DeMar DeRozan are guarding, because let's be honest, they're not great defenders. And he even has to help at times with rim protection around the rim with DeMontis Sabonis, who's not necessarily known for protecting the rim. So I don't think that Keegan Murray is at all an overrated defender. I think it's fair to question his ability as a high-level two-way player, because it's clear that, and it's been clear all season long, the more emphasis that there is on Keegan taking on a lot of defensive responsibility, it's clear the offense has been impacted by that. So maybe his ceiling has dropped down a little bit as an overall two-way star caliber player or all-star caliber player, which is what the Kings believed he was when they drafted him. But bad defender or overrated defender, not at all.
KC said he looked like Luka Doncic.
Yeah, he did. Right. Matt, do you think that's a conditioning thing? The fact that he can't take on that defensive load and still be able to put up buckets? Do you think that's what that is? Something that you can kind of work on in the offseason? Or is that just like a mental strain? Or what do you think that is?
Yeah, I'm trying to make sense of it, Trista, because we've been looking at, I mean, it's been an issue for the entire Kings team this season with their inconsistent three-point shooting, unless it's Keon Ellis or DeMontis Sabonis. And to the surprise of absolutely no one here in Sacramento, suddenly Zach LaVine can't shoot the three. Wow, never saw that coming. It's almost like that's happened a billion times in the history of the Kings. A great shooter comes to Sacramento and forgets how to shoot. But for Keegan specifically, I mean, I think conditioning has to play a part, right? Because of or maybe it's just like he's so mentally locked in on the defensive side and what he has to do defensively that offensively he's just maybe even mentally overthinking about, I got to be here, I got to space the floor, I got to run the ball through this guy or play through this guy or be in the corner and ready for this. And I don't know, like it doesn't make sense why Keegan's shooting has fallen off as much as it has. I think he's steadily starting to bring it back. I also do think offensively Keegan's doing a much better job recently of putting the ball on the floor and actually trying to attack the basket a little bit. So that's been encouraging. But the Kings need him to be a high caliber 3-and-D guy for them to get to where they want to be. And he's got the defense down, but the 3-point shot just isn't consistent enough for him to be reliable yet. And I think conditioning has to play some sort of part in it.
I like one of my favorite Keegan plays that he does is he puts the ball on the deck, maybe 2 dribbles max, and he gets about 13 to 15 feet away with that ball on the left side, little fall away. And I'd like to see more of that from him. I'd like to see even situations where, I know the offense doesn't necessarily work like this, but get him the ball in the mid post. If he's got an Alvarado type player on him or something like that, and let him shoot over the top. The other day I was talking about it with James about him using being in the post a little bit more, and not like a big body, like get the ball to him so he can hit a little turnaround fadeaway on somebody. He's 6'8", you know, and if they try to stick somebody on there that's 6'5" or something like that, he's got the touch. Let him shoot over the top. I like to see that a little bit more in the Kings offense. Once again, I don't know if that's even in their playbook, but I think that would help them out a little bit on the offensive end.
I do know for a fact that we haven't seen the best of Keegan in terms of, like, he's still developing. He's still in his third year. But one thing I think that I'm starting to just accept with who Keegan is as a player, I don't think he's ever going to be the guy to demand the basketball, right? He's a guy that's just going to score in the flow. And we saw it a couple of games ago, right? He had a really, really good first quarter and then barely scored for the rest of the game. And then he had the game, I think it was in Dallas, where he didn't shoot a single shot in the first half, and then he scored 11 points in the second or in the third quarter, and then didn't score at all in the fourth quarter, right? And I think the broadcast was talking a lot about, like, the basketball finding him in the flow of the offense, and I think that's even more extreme now that you have so many ball dominant players on the floor. I mean, if you think about it, Keegan Murray's in a starting lineup featuring 4 guys that pretty much primarily need to have the ball in their hands, from DeRozan and LaVine, who speak for themselves, Malik Monk, who's the facilitator and creator, and even DeMontis Sabonis, so much is run through him. So Keegan is the one guy maybe filling and I know this is probably has a negative connotation to it, but offensively kind of filling a Harrison Barnes-esque role. Like, your job is out there, space the floor. If the ball is kicked out to you, shoot. And what Keon Ellis is showing us is that's okay. You can be that. That's what Keon Ellis has been doing. That's what he did last night when he hit 7 threes. He just was consistently being left open and shooting that shot with confidence and knocking it down, because defenses have to respect the other guys that are on the floor with him. So I don't know if Keegan needs to simplify things or whatever it is, but the ball is going to find you on open 3 opportunities. You have to knock those down. Just with this roster and the way it's constructed, that's the primary way I'm going to see him scoring baskets. Like, that's how he's going to get his points.
Matthew, I'm a professional.
Uh-oh.
But I can't take this. What is over your left shoulder, and is it rotating?
My left.
Just look behind you.
Right shoulder?
Or maybe your right shoulder. I don't know. Just turn around. What is that thing behind you?
Is that the earth?
That it looks like
camera?
It. Nope.
Move
the
earth.
The other way. Yeah, what is.
Look.
It's right there.
Turn
what is that?
It does look like it's rotating.
Thank you.
What is it?
Oh, it's a balloon.
It's a balloon. Is it like a metallic colored balloon that's just turning around in a circle?
Yes,
it looked like a Super Bowl trophy balloon for a second. And then I was like, is that moving?
It says happy birthday to you with sunflowers on it.
Yeah. Oh. See, it's like De'Aaron's castle video. Now that we understand. Yeah, it's clearly a balloon.
It's clearly a balloon. It looked like a disco ball. Like, at first I thought it was a trophy. And then I was like, that thing is moving. Like, it's absolutely moving. All right, it's a balloon.
So we are in our makeshift studio.
This is a very reserved Matt George. That's why he's talking this way.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to be respectful to everybody else that wants to kill me right now. But we're in a makeshift studio right now. We're about to move back into our main
Do you have a mini mic on? Is that a mini mic? What is that?
I do. I'm holding it. Look at this. I feel like a streamer. I feel like someone on TikTok. And, like, holding the mic up to my mouth like I'm pop culture. So anyway.
Matt pissing off his coworkers is a tradition that will never, ever, ever go away.
It's not hard for me. I don't understand why.
What about Keon Ellis? We can be frustrated with Keegan Murray taking 5 shots if we want to. There's no need to be, because we saw Keon Ellis score 27 and be absolutely dynamic from 7-11 from 3. And Malik postgame was like, yeah, it's no big deal. That's what he do. That's what he does. We see it so often, man. That's what he does.
I mean, I don't know how Malik's, or sorry, Keon is not on like a one-way train to a starting spot. And this is one of the things I spoke about, and people thought I was being like pessimistic last night. And I guess in a way I kind of am. Guys, I'm not a believer in this core. I'm not a believer in how far this team can ultimately take you. And I think the writing is on the wall for this summer. One of Zach LaVine or DeMar DeRozan will need to be moved. And I think it's DeMar because of his contract. Like LaVine is making $46-47 million next year, $49 million after that. So he's almost owed $100 million over the next 2 years. Good luck moving that. The Bulls barely could until the Kings had to trade De'Aaron Fox. So I think DeMar DeRozan has to be the guy that's moved, not because DeMar isn't doing his job. And we've seen DeMar over these last couple of games has been really, really good. But I just think this roster construction is clunky, and Keon is on a path to where he's undeniably one of your highest win impact players. He's been that for the last year and a half at this point. And on top of that, like, you got to start thinking about long-term with Keon Ellis too, because you have a club option for next year. Keon makes $2.5 million next year. It's the best contract in the freaking NBA. But after that, he's an unrestricted free agent. So you got to worry about every other team in the league looking at Keon Ellis right now and look and saying, we want that guy. And I think one of the big ways the Kings are going to be able to retain him or hopefully bring him back is by implementing him into a starting caliber role. In order to do that, with the five that are on the floor right now, I don't think getting rid of Keegan Murray in your starting lineup makes any sense whatsoever, because you're trying to bring more defense in, not get rid of defense to replace it with smaller defense. So Keegan's not going anywhere. Domas isn't going anywhere. I don't think you can get rid of Malik Monk like people think, because he's your, now with you have Markelle Fultz, I guess, but he's your only primary ball handler and facilitator and playmaker that you have. So it falls to LaVine and DeRozan, in my opinion. So going back to Keon, though, I mean, he's just sensational. He's phenomenal. He's a high-impact winning player. I mean, he does so many things right. And I identified, like, three of my favorite traits of Keon last night. And one of them is just his fluidity, right? His fluidity, and then another one was his fearlessness, right? He shoots every shot. Like, he doesn't care if it's a good look. He takes it without hesitation. Sometimes they fall, like last night. Sometimes they don't. He keeps shooting them. And then fluidity, you can plug him into every lineup, any game situation, and he impacts the game the same way. So the Kings have been looking for a Keon Ellis type player for forever. What they need is another Keon Ellis type player that's 6'9". Like, that's essentially what they need at this point. But Keon is sensational, and I don't even know where the Sacramento Kings would be. I know last night the Kings would have been down 15 points in the first half if Keon Ellis didn't drop 21. So he's a sensational player. In my opinion, he should be the poster child for two-way contracts. I know Austin Reeves exists, but he's in LA and part of the LA hype machine. Like, he's one of the best stories in the NBA, and he is the gold star for this front office at this point. He is what they can put at the top of their resume and go, look what we found, look what we did. And he's rewarding them for that. And he doesn't show any signs of slowing down, stopping, and I still think he can get better. That's really exciting.
I like Keon. I love Keon. I love everything that he brings to the table. I don't know. You don't have to start. Like, if you're finding a way to get 25 to 30 minutes out of him every night, that's what matters. There's certain situations where he'll finish games and certain situations where you may need a little more offense. So it's just me. Like, I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong. I don't think he has to start. Like, he's cool in the role that he's in and flourishing that.
Do you think, Kenny, the defense to start games would be better if Keon were out there instead of DeRozan or LaVine?
Yeah.
Why don't they make LaVine be the highest paid sixth man in the NBA?
I think that's a tough look, but I think it's worth talking about. But bringing a $40+ million player off of the bench after you traded for him in a De'Aaron Fox trade, I think optically looks terrible.
It was a desperation move. I mean, it's basically what the Suns are doing with Bradley Beal right now. It's the exact same situation, only you don't have the no trade clause for him. I mean, let's be honest, you're not trading for Zach LaVine making $50 million a year without feeling forced to the table with De'Aaron Fox needing to go. There's just no way you make that trade, because now you're basically stuck keeping a guy who's owed $150 million and is giving you $5 million a year production right now.
Yeah, I'm also thinking from it from the standpoint of the front office, and I've had to include this angle in because I felt like everything that the front office has been doing since really the last month and some change has been jaw protecting mode. And I mean, that's natural based off the circumstance they're in. And I think about it from the standpoint of, if your front office traded De'Aaron Fox and the main piece they got back, which is what they say they wanted, and they didn't, they weren't going to trade De'Aaron Fox unless they got what they wanted, and they got what they wanted in Zach LaVine. And within six games, now we got to bring him in off the bench, or the coach decides you're in your best case scenario to bring him off the bench because he doesn't fit with what you're doing. Hello. It just speaks to the roster construction issue you've had for the last 2 years. So I think as for the remainder of this season, I think the Kings are stuck with where they're at, and at best, and I think it's good enough to make a playoff run. I think this team loses in the first round if they make it that far, but I'm willing to let it ride for the remainder of the season. But I think the writing is on the wall this offseason, the same way it would have been if De'Aaron Fox were still on this team. But that ship has sailed. Now you look to the future, and if you want to truly be a team that is a perennial playoff team and works themselves into contention, I don't know if you can be that with a DeRozan, LaVine core, because of the other pieces that you need to improve other areas of the game. I'm not putting it all on those two. It's not that those two are the problem. It's just in order to, I think, get to where you need to go, one of the two of them has to be moved.
Well, we saw that with Chicago. It didn't work with both of them together in Chicago. What ended up happening at the end of the games was Zach LaVine didn't know where he fit in, and DeMar DeRozan became number one clutch player in the NBA, and Zach LaVine was throwing grenades out to other guys and sort of looking like a guy that maybe is a culture problem, and maybe that had to do with just the fit between him and DeMar. I don't really know what was going on, but if
they lost their point guard,
But I mean, they have Kobe White.
He's not Lonzo.
He's not
That's
Lonzo.
A point guard. Kobe White is more like Malik Monk.
Yes, yes. So
that somebody that can orchestrate and say, "You get here, you get there. I'm gonna set you up."
Well, but you don't have a point guard guys. Now, right? So you better figure out a way to get like Tyus Jones. And say, oh, well, if Lonzo Ball was the key to making DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine work, then we need a point guard that's not Malik Monk, and maybe he can come off the bench, and you find a table setter like a Tyus Jones.
But what you do have is you at least have Domantas Sabonis.
And he's now the table setter.
He was a table setter a lot, even when De'Aaron was here.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not saying he's
So you want to make him the fulcrum of the offense and have him be at the top of the key facilitating.
Maybe more. I'd like to see more like dribble handoff type stuff and let him operate off of that. Screen and rolls. Usually, like in the fourth quarter, Sabonis defers to Monk or Fox and says, "Hey, what is it that you guys?" Or even DeRozan to see what you guys want to do. But if you're in a crunch, I'd like to see them. I don't know if they will, but I'd like to see them get the ball to DeMontis at the elbow and let people run off of him and figure some out that way. I don't know if they actually do it, but I'd like to see it.
Well, I'm seeing people in the chatty house talking about this, and this is something that's been brought up a ton on the broadcast, brought up a ton on social media, and it's the concept of practice time. And I agree that if this team gets some time to work together and practice together, it'll probably look a little less clunky and a little more polished. But if the primary issue is finding a way to build consistency around a core of DeRozan and LaVine, these guys spent years together in Chicago. What is a couple weeks of practice time or a couple days of practice time? Because we're in the middle of the season. And unless you're...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going
So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Unless you're Mike Brown, who forces as much practice time as possible, which pissed off players and people didn't like Doug Christie tries to take care of these guys as much as possible. So he's already limiting practice time as it is. I think expecting practice time over the course of this All-Star break or the remainder of the season and expecting that to be a difference maker enough to make this team a team that can win in the playoffs, I think it's wishful thinking. I think it just comes down to roster construction and overall just the clunkiness of this team. They are 100% good enough to compete with any team on any given night. I think they're good enough to make a playoff run. But if we're just okay with that, which at this point, if they make the playoffs given everything that's happened this season, I take that as 100% a moral victory. But if you're looking at building long-term success, if you're looking at it from the standpoint of this front office trying to build a winner, a 35, 36-year-old DeRozan and an almost $100-plus million player in Zach LaVine, plus these other pieces that you're trying to fit in with the prospect of potentially losing Keon after next season. Like, I just don't think the Kings are in a very good position to where a GM would want to – if you were to start fresh and say you can pick the Kings and rebuild the Kings, I think you're taking this and it's like a bunch of blocks that don't fit together and you're going, How do I turn this into something cohesive? That's just where I feel like this roster is at. Short term, it's fine. Long term, it's concerning.
Kings have won 3 in a row headed into tonight's game.
Yeah.
In New Orleans.
What did I say, 15-8 in the Doug Christie era?
15-8 in the Doug Christie era. And just as importantly as the Kings playing the Pelicans tonight, the Warriors are in Houston. The Heat are in Dallas. And Oklahoma City is in Minnesota. So this could be a really big night for Sacramento, but they need to get a second victory against the Pelicans here. I guess that would be 3 on the year. That would be like 3 on the week at this point for Sacramento. You mentioned Zach. Sorry?
Oh, no. I was about to say a season sweep, but the first game was a play-in type scenario. They'd beat them 4 straight times if they get tonight.
A playing?
Yeah.
Oh, the in-season tournament?
Excuse me, yeah, I'm sorry, the in-season
Yeah, the in-season tournament, yeah.
So I think they beat them with the Pelicans, though.
Mm-hmm. This would be 4-0. Yeah. This would be a 4-0 sweep.
Well, that's a refreshing change from 6-0. It's very nice. It's very nice. Okay, so you hate DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. Well, all right.
That's D'Lo McKee.
Tell me
how you feel about Devin Carter.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. How do we feel about Devin Carter? Because right now you could talk about Keon Ellis and how that's a thumbs up for the front office, and it absolutely is. But, man, there are a gigantic black eye on this front office, and his name is Devin Carter.
Well, I appreciate the man because he and I probably have similar hairline situations going on.
So yours is better. At the same time. Yours is way better.
Wow.
Don't do that to Devin. I don't know. There's a reason why I'm picking this angle, D'Lo. If I tilt down a little bit more, it's a disaster. I'm going to look like KC pretty soon.
Well, come on, brother. Come on.
No, please no. Please no. With these ears, I'll look like an unbalanced top. Anyway.
I feel you. Well.
Pause.
Boy. Anyway, Devin's not ready. He's just not. Like, it's clear to see. Like, he has the intangibles. He has the measure. He has the wingspan. He has a nose for the ball rebounding-wise. That's great. Like, he has all these little things that are exciting when you're talking about a prospect. But for a backup point guard who needs to play 10 to 15 minutes a night that has an even higher responsibility because Malik Monk is doing his best as a point guard when Malik is not primarily a point guard. He's a guard. He's a creator. He's a playmaker, but he's not a traditional point guard. So Devin Carter or whoever, like Markelle Fultz now, whoever the backup point guard here in Sacramento has a pretty significant responsibility in those 10 to 15 minutes that Malik isn't on the floor. Devin's not ready for that. He's already behind the eight ball because he had surgery and missed the first half of the season. And I mean, the jump shot is broken. It does not look good. It's not translating. He's a good rebounder. He's got good wingspan to be a halfway decent defender. But when he's on the floor, I don't see much impact other than a couple of, neat moments. And that's not good enough on a team that's trying to make a playoff push. So, yeah, Devin Carter's just not ready. Am I over? Like, is it the ship has sailed? The guy's not good? No, absolutely not. I think his time in Stockton will be good. But for what the Kings need right now, for being in a position of a win now team to draft Devin Carter, knowing full well that he was going to need surgery and be behind the eight ball. And then this is what he comes out with. It's a failure Some believe a fireball offense.
And it's tough too, because you're looking at a team that needed a backup point guard, arguably. I mean, considering what Mike Brown felt about Keon and what Keon's skill set is, and you need somebody to come out and help you right away. And there's other guys that they could have gotten down the draft board, like a Jared McCain, that doesn't fit that what you need, but actually maybe might be the best player available. Or a Khalil Ware, who's now a leader in the clubhouse.
Jalen Ware.
Yeah.
Jalen Wells.
You could have got him in the second round. So I think that balance is really interesting. If you were the Kings and you look back, and I know hindsight's 20/20, if you're looking for a backup point guard, what would you have done versus getting somebody in the draft? Would you have tried to make a trade, like go out in free agency? Who is that guard that you think would have been gettable?
I'll say it before Matt does, Russell Westbrook, but go ahead.
I don't actually hate that especially with how good he's been in Denver this season, but... Yeah,
he would have hated Mike Malone too. Yeah, he would have hated Mike Malone too. But go ahead, Matt. Sorry.
Hindsight is 20/20 for sure. I don't know if I have like a definitive answer to that question necessarily, but like I see people saying like, there was Fox Insurance drafting another guard. So Devin Carter was the choice. If you were concerned about losing De'Aaron Fox, Devin Carter was the choice to back up De'Aaron Fox. Like, congratulations. The way that you expected it to win, it went. And now here's Devin Carter, who's being sent down to the G League. So I think there are other veteran guards that are out there that are available that could have held down the spot a little bit better. I mean, Jordan McLaughlin barely got any kind of run here in Sacramento. I think he could have done more and been more. Like, he got a little bit of run and then we just never saw him again, which was primarily a Mike Brown decision, not a front office or Doug Christie decision. But, I don't know if there's exactly a name to answer your question, Trista, but I have to believe there are plenty of better options than a rookie who misses 2 months of the season and then comes in and is struggling the way that he is. And I don't really I don't blame Devin Carter for the circumstance. I don't blame Devin Carter for getting hurt. Apparently, everybody knew that he was going to need this procedure when they drafted him. It was public knowledge, and they still made this decision. So that's not on Devin. Devin has to just work his way back and try and be the best player that he is, and he's thrust into a situation where, very similar, Keegan was thrust into that situation, being on a team with winning aspirations as a rookie. The difference is, though, Keegan Murray was a top four pick, and he also was a guy that gave you depth at a position that you desperately needed. So not only did you take another guard, which I'm sure De'Aaron Fox felt a certain way about, you took a guard that wasn't ready, and you passed up not just on better guards that were available, you passed up on guys that were 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", drastically filling or could give you depth or give you at least a shot at a position that you had zero depth in. So it's going to be, as much as like Keon Ellis is the gold star on the resume, unfortunately Devin Carter might be the kiss of death.
You think we see Devin Carter with the big club again this year?
Yes. Yeah. They'll call him back up at some point. Do I think he'll play over Markelle Fultz? I hope not. Because that means Markelle Fultz didn't work. Yeah. So I hope we don't see him really play anymore except for garbage time. But he will get called up, and he should still spend time around the team and try and work around the team as much as possible, because he's not a two-way player. Like, he's your rookie. He's your lottery pick. So you still have faith in him into development. Hopefully he gets a little confidence playing in Stockton, and you bring him right back to the main club, and he just stays ready, and Doug can go to him in certain situations where you need a rebound or a little more perimeter defense or whatever. Maybe he can get spot minutes in that sense. But if Devin Carter is playing heavy minutes again, I don't like the Kings' chances, or I don't like the scenario that they're in, at least short term.
The way the NBA goes, it's always like frowned upon if he stayed in Stockton the whole time. And I kind of wish that would change. Like, it's not the worst thing in the world, regardless of what the expectations are or where he was drafted, if you just give him a season a la baseball to get acclimated to being a pro or work on his game or something like that. I agree with you, Matt. Like, that's just not the way the NBA works, but I wish that thinking would change a little bit. Like, so Devin Carter should just be in Stockton, work on being in Stockton for the year, and then we'll see you in the summer. But that's not how they go about things.
I think the where you are at as a franchise determines that, right? If it's the Boston Celtics can get away with that because their main squad is so good. It's like, all right, rookie, like, develop, and we'll call you up. For the Kings, it's like, no, we need it now. We're trying to win right now, and we don't have depth now. Devin, we got to throw you in and hope you stick. So it just depends on the – and then, of course, if you're talking about, like, lottery picks and top picks that the Washington Wizards of the world are going to get, they're getting the green light right away. So in a weird way, like baseball, it's kind of a universal development system. Like, every single team has their rookies go up through the prospect rankings until they get called up to the show. In the NBA, it's like great teams can develop their rookies. Bad teams give everything to their rookies right away. And then the teams in the middle, like where the Sacramento Kings are, need their rookies to be impactful, at least. And Carter hasn't lived up to that.
Jonas Valanciunas has been impactful since being acquired by the Sacramento Kings. What do you think of him so far? But specifically, what do you think of the big boy lineup we saw a couple nights ago for the first time?
I think the Jonas Valanciunas move was brilliant by this front office. I know I've been very, very critical of this front office. I think it made a lot of sense, and I like that they made a move that made a lot of sense, and they used some of the assets that they got in the Fox trade to ultimately make that move. I think Valanciunas has been fantastic. The big man lineup, what I really like, I credit the big man lineup success to Doug Christie in a lot of ways, because I think Doug picked a very, very good time and a good team to do it against, to try it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He waited till it was against the Dallas Mavericks team, where you can live with Omax Prosper getting open looks on the perimeter while Domas and Jonas are trying to figure things out. I'm hesitant to believe that lineup will work in every situation. Like, the example I use is, let's say Keegan Murray's on the opposing team. I know Keegan Murray's not the biggest offensive threat, but do you trust Domas to defend on the perimeter a Keegan Murray-esque type player who's going to take advantage of you helping, or is supposed to take advantage of you helping, as much as I would expect Domas to try and help naturally Jonas Valanciunas or any other guard that gets beat on the perimeter? So I don't, if there's a true stretch four that's like a high percentage shooter, I don't know if it works, but against teams that have defensive-minded fours out there against teams that are like very perimeter drive and kick heavy, I think it's fantastic. I think it works really, really well. And I mean, good luck trying to get a rebound over those two guys. I mean, Domantas Sabonis at times has gotten frustrated with his own teammates getting rebounds. And now Domas is looking at Valanciunas like, your ball, bro. You can have it. I ain't even going to try and fight you for it. So like the Kings can get every single rebound with those two on the floor together. And I mean, I think Valanciunas has just been seamless. Like he comes in and he plays his game. The space he creates for guards just because of how big he is when he sets screens. And then y'all, when he I can't remember who he got to jump, but when he got the Pelicans to bite on that pump fake and then threw down that reverse jam, I was like Keon Ellis in the corner. I was sitting in this chair and I popped up with that reverse dunk from Jonas Valanciunas. So I'm a big fan of the big man. I like that pickup, and I want to see that two big lineup more.
Who was that? It was like Matovic, who fouled out in like 4 minutes of play. Mm-hmm. Guy fouled out with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter.
He did his job.
He put me in for one reason. Came to do what I was asked to do. So I know, Casey, do you feel good about tonight's game? You do. I mean, I don't feel like you really like the way that the Kings are playing, but you think they could get by New Orleans tonight? I mean, you got to – that if that happens – that's a four-game winning streak going into the break.
Yeah, I'm going to give the Kings the credit of recognizing that even though this is a getaway game, and we saw the Lakers get beat up by the Utah Jazz last night because the Lakers were also in a getaway game. But the Kings are in a position to where they know they're about to go into a pretty heavy race. I don't know if you guys have looked at the schedule once they come out of All-Star break. It's brutal.
Yep.
So they got these wins matter a lot. So I and this is where I put a lot of faith in, like, Doug Christie is the motivator and the guy who Doug has the same approach to every game, which I think is a breath of fresh air. He talks about the faceless opponent, right? We play the same way regardless of who we're playing, no matter what color the jersey is or what name is on the back or the front or whatever. We play the same way. So if the Kings play the same way, they should beat and sweep the Pelicans tonight, unless CJ McCollum just decides he's still pissed off against the Sacramento Kings. He needs to chill out a little bit. And Zion's just a beast, but the Kings can handle Zion being a beast.
Well, Zion's out tonight. I think Zion's out tonight.
Oh, then, yeah, you 100%. You win this game. You have to win this game, and I hope the Kings don't fall into the same trap that, to be fair, a lot of teams do, but we've seen it a lot of times on these last games of road trips or getaway games or whatever.
Well, the good news is this ain't a getaway game. It was already there. Right. Like, you've been in New Orleans. Yeah, you've been in New Orleans a couple of days. This ain't like they flew in last night from Dallas and had the hard fought win against Dallas last night. No, dog, you've been in New Orleans a couple of days. You've enjoyed Bourbon Street. Go get the dub tonight, man. What are we doing?
That's true, but a lot of these guys are after the game. They're cleaning out their locker and going in separate planes to different parts of the country, depending upon what they want to do. So, I mean, I know I'm tired from the standpoint of watching and covering this team. How exhausted are these guys to get? I mean, it's a long break. They don't play again until Friday of next week against the Warriors in Sacramento. So these guys naturally are going to want to get a little bit of a break, and that sometimes can affect the way that you play and how focused and locked in you are. And I just hope Doug Christie can combat that issue that we see around the league.
What was it? It was Doc Rivers when last year, right before All-Star break, the Bucks got blew out, and he was like, yeah, these guys had their head already in Mexico.
They were already gone. They were already gone. Yeah, yeah.
It's good. I thought we were going to make it the whole day, and we didn't.
Without an impression or Doc Rivers slander?
No, just a impression of someone.
Well, he already did the Draymond Green impression earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't heard Kenny's Draymond. What's Kenny's Draymond?
Well, Matt, quite frankly, I've been a victim of being a winner in the past, and I'm here to hope Jimmy doesn't have the same situation.
That might be his best one. That was really good. I like that one.
Oh, good. Thanks, Matt.
Now, go put someone in a headlock.
Well, just settle down, because
okay.
We're just talk about sports. That's all we're doing. How was that Q12-27 last night?
Sir, I think Chef Q would show you the door if you showed up at Q12-27 yesterday. I ain't going to speak for my man Chef Q.
Oh, what is up with Chef Q? Is this like a legend that I need to come back to?
Yeah, we take you to Q1227. It's not really a restaurant you just walk into, and I don't think it's one you could walk into the day before Valentine's Day.
Q1227.
Oh, yeah.
Trista D'Lo will take you to his spots. He doesn't take the people that are around him and his friends in the city, but he'll take you when you come through.
The out-of-towners.
That's a good call. I've never been there with him. Yeah, it's cool. That's good.
Now, we're at the Kings game the other night, and it went like a guy that works at a restaurant that D'Lo frequents comes up and says, oh, D'Lo's gonna bring you sometime. I'm like, oh really? Yeah, that's pretty,
well,
pretty cool.
I'm glad this turned into the roast D'Lo segment. We gotta go.
Family and friends feast. I'm in.
All right, goodbye everybody.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.